Hi, thank you for coming. And I have to admit, I'm a bit in awe of all of the people who come to Dragon Con, because I'm a guest, and I've been coming here for 10 years, and I just breeze on up to the guest thing, and I pick up my ribbon. And today I took the time to actually walk the line that you guys stand in. And you have so much respect for me. I mean, what was the typical amount of time you guys had to wait to get your badges? 2.5 hours?
4.5.
It boggles my mind. So it makes me really appreciate what you guys went through to be here. So it inspires me to give you a really good talk, because I know what you went through. So again, thank you. So this is the talk. Jim Sanborn is a guy that makes sculptures, both public sculptures, and does gallery art. And he did a very famous sculpture at the center of CIA headquarters, you can see on the slide here, which is called Kryptos. Kryptos was installed in 1990 as a challenge to the employees at the CIA. It has codes on it, 4 codes on it. 3 of the 4 have been solved. The 4th has not been solved yet. It's considered to be one of the most famous unsolved codes in the world, and I am considered to be the world's number one expert on this sculpture. I've been interviewed on television. CNN has done bits on it, Nova Science Now. My day job is that I make computer games. And I'm actually, my interest in cryptography right now actually all stems from Dragon Con. I would not be where I am today if it were not for Dragon Con. I was actually here at Dragon Con about 10 years ago speaking about games in this electronics track, that we were in a different room at the time, and I met other speakers in the track. And some of the other speakers are hackers coming in and speaking about computer security. And they were handing out this code, which was a challenge that had been released at a Nashville hacker convention. It had been a year, no one had cracked it, and they were offering a prize to the first person that could crack this code. So I picked it up with all the other flyers you get around Dragon Con, and I took it home and got really obsessed with it, and I cracked it, and I won a prize, which was a free trip to a hacker con, free hotel, drinks, t-shirts, all that stuff. And then I went around cracking a bunch of other codes. I've actually cracked so many in the hacker scene, I've actually been banned from competition on these. For example, when there was the... at the AtlantiCon, HackerCon, which is like AtlantiCon, when they released their code, it was on a sheet of paper, and at the bottom of the paper it said, "Note, past puzzle crackers are ineligible for prizes associated with solving the AtlantiCon puzzle. Give someone else a chance, Ilanka." So I cracked that one too. And then after September 11th, I was as enraged as everyone else by what had happened, and I was wondering if I could use my cryptography experience to kind of help with the war on terrorism. And to make a very long story much shorter, I started researching what kind of codes that Al-Qaeda had been using. And I started giving talks about what codes they were using, and what there were also lots of rumors about what kind of codes they were using, and many of those rumors had very little basis in fact, and so I was going around debunking the rumors. I can definitely talk about that for a long time, but that's not the focus of this talk. I'm just trying to get up to where we are. So as I was giving this talk about Al-Qaeda codes, one of the places that I gave it was at the Central Intelligence Agency. And when I went to the CIA, I gave my talk on Al-Qaeda codes, but I put in a condition saying I'll give the talk, but I also want time to look at the sculpture called Kryptos. And we had to go back and forth, and they kept insisting on paying me, and I kept saying, "I don't want to be paid, I just want to see Kryptos." And we came to a compromise where I really didn't want to be paid, but they forced me to take like $2,500, even though I was saying, "Don't pay me." So that's me negotiating with the government for your tax dollars, by the way. So I got to see Kryptos. I did a website on it, and I put a little web page up on the internet about Ilanka's visit to Kryptos. And then I started getting people corresponding with me and asking me questions about Kryptos, which I didn't know the answers to at that time, but I started researching those. And one of the people that I got in contact with was a guy named Dan Brown, who had written this book called The Da Vinci Code. Now, at the time he wrote the book, Dan Brown and I had really not heard of each other, or if he'd heard of me, I was not aware of him. But hidden in the artwork of the book jacket of this edition of The Da Vinci Code, the first American edition, there's puzzles hidden in the artwork. There's actually 5 puzzles. And 2 of those puzzles refer to Kryptos. And so what Brown was doing was he was giving clues that his next book was going to kind of take place in the Washington, D.C. area, and was going to be about perhaps Kryptos, perhaps some of the codes in the Washington area. How many people have read The Da Vinci Code here, just so I know? Okay. How many people have read the sequel to The Da Vinci Code, The Lost Symbol? Okay, Kryptos does feature in the lost symbol, and I did help Dan Brown with some of the research for this book. There are codes hidden in the artwork of this book jacket as well. And as a way of saying thank you, Dan Brown actually named one of the characters in the book after me. So, Randall's like, damn, I don't have that. So what Brown does is he scrambles names a little bit. So like his editor's name is Jason Kaufman, and in the book there's a character named Jonas Falkman. So he just kind of scrambled it a little bit. And my name is Ilanka, and in the book there's a character named Nola Kay, which is an anagram for Ilanka. So after we knew that Dan Brown was going to write Lost Symbol and people knew that Kryptos was going to feature in the book, I got contacted by a book publisher who said, well, we're going to be writing a book which goes over the fact and fiction of what's in the Lost Symbol, and it's going to be called Secrets of the Lost Symbol. It's a series of articles by various academics talking about what Dan Brown got right and what he got wrong, mostly what he got wrong. And the two of the articles in this were written by me, and so this is also something I'll be talking a little bit about. So, going on, working on Kryptos, one of the angles that I was taking was to look at the other sculptures that Sanborn had done. And most people were focusing just on Kryptos and weren't looking at some of the other pieces that he had done, which also had encryption, or learning at what point in his career he kind of switched from doing one type of art to another phase. Any major artist has a body of work, and as you study them, you'll see they go through different phases. Their blue phase, their oils phase, their marble phase, and Sanborn has those phases as well. So this talk is actually one that I gave in Washington, D.C., last year at the National Security Agency. So you'll actually be seeing some of the exact same slides that I was showing there, because they too want to solve that fourth part of Kryptos. They've tried, they've solved the first three parts, but they haven't solved the fourth part either. So the themes of Sanborn's career, and I've met Sanborn several times, he really goes to great pains to say that he has two main phases of his art, the public art and the gallery art. And within his circle of artists, they believe that the prestige art is the gallery art, which is where you go into a gallery and you sip wine and then eat cheese and those things. And that's what they want to be known for. And now to finance their gallery art, artists will also do public art. And these are things that you see as you're driving down the highway and you see a big sculpture in front of a building somewhere. And often, these buildings will commission art, not because they're interested really in supporting the arts, but because the zoning commission for the area declares tax rates for the buildings. And if a building has art around it, then the taxes will be lower. So the constructors will go out and say, give us art, give us art. They don't care what the art is. They just want art there as a way of paying less money for it. So Sanborn has definitely done this, and this was one of the reasons that Kryptos was created. So it's a little bit frustrating to Sanborn that the thing he is most famous for is a public art piece rather than all this other gallery art that he's done as well. And the reason that I went into all this at the NSA also is trying to understand the artist, that perhaps by understanding his themes and understanding what he did before Kryptos, what he did after Kryptos, it may give us some clues as to solving Kryptos. So before Kryptos, he had themes. He had a magnetism theme, and he also had very frequently themes that had to do with invisible forces. Sanborn loves to take things that are invisible and make them visible. And this could be magnetism. This could be things like the Coriolis force. He'll have, and I'll show some pictures of it, like a gallery where you walk in and there's hundreds of strings hanging from the ceiling, and from each string is hanging a small needle. And all the needles are pointing at this one lodestone, which is at the far end of the building. So it's not obvious, I mean, to us it's obviously of a compass, but walking in there you see all these needles all pointing, so it's an invisible force that he has managed to make visible. Kryptos itself, the word Kryptos is Greek and it stands for hidden, so it ties into this theme of his. So after he was doing these magnetism themes, he went into an encryption theme, and then he got completely, and he did several pieces that were encrypted, and then he went into a separate theme which had to do with projected light, and I'll show you those. And currently he's into a theme of radioactivity and the history of atomic research. He actually, in his backyard, built a particle accelerator, a real live working particle accelerator with things, you know, splitting off of it. And he has a very jury-rigged system where he has a large kind of a barn warehouse where he's working, and he's tried to recreate the original labs when fission was first done. And I mean, it's so dangerous it boggles the mind. I don't even want to go visit him sometimes when he has this thing turned on, he'll hide behind this partition, and he has an aquarium of water that he looks through, and he has like the switch to turn it on with this long rope, and he's pulling the rope to turn it on from one side. But he's fascinated by this stuff, that he wants to make this idea of nuclear reactions visible. So I already told you a little bit about Kryptos, and in pop culture it became much, much more famous with the Da Vinci Code and then with the Lost Symbol. The couple of the codes on the back of the book where all the blurbs are, very, very faintly, so it's red here, but very, very faintly, light red on dark red, there are some numbers. And these numbers, I don't know if you can see them in the slide, you know, it says 37 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north, 77 degrees, 8 minutes, 44 seconds west. These are the numbers, they come from a part of the decrypted text of Kryptos, and I'll go into those, and they point to CIA headquarters. But they don't point exactly to the Kryptos sculpture, they point a little bit off, and there's a lot of speculation as to why these numbers point there. Also, Dan Brown changed the number. On Kryptos, the number says 38 degrees, 57 minutes. But Brown, on his book, put 37 degrees, 57 minutes. And I was talking to Brown, and I mentioned that, and I said, was it just a mistake? And he said, no, the discrepancy is intentional. But he didn't say why. And then when I was talking to his editor, Kaufman, and I said, by the way, you know, when you published the book, it said 37 or 38. And Kaufman said, the discrepancy is intentional. So, okay, so they have it worked out, but I don't know. And even having read The Lost Symbol, I'm still a little unclear as to, you know, what they intended from that intentional. Maybe. That's easy to do. That's a low bar there. So here on the back of Da Vinci Code, we have a couple other puzzles. One of them, this actually doesn't refer to Kryptos, but there's a circle of numbers here. And if you go to each one of the chapters in the book and you take the big letter at the beginning of the chapter and then put them into a grid, you can get a secret message that way. And then also in this area that looks like a brown tear are the words only WW knows, which again is a reference to part of the decrypted text of Kryptos, which I'll go into. And I told you about Lost Symbol. So this is Jim Sanborn, still living, born in Washington, D.C. He's a very bright guy, very tall. He's traveled a lot, has a degree in social anthropology and sculpture. He actually didn't start off wanting to be an artist. He started off wanting to be an architect. But then at one point he was building one of the maquettes, where kind of a miniature of what a building is supposed to look like. And he got so into that that he decided that the art was more what he was interested in. What he's leaning against there is kind of interesting. When he was at CIA, he found that they shred a lot of documents, huge quantities of documents are shredded every day. And they take the paper, they shred it, they mix it with a chemical to kind of turn it into this kind of popcorn kind of material. And Sanborn experimented with this and actually asked them for several bags of this popcornish stuff. And he found that if he mixed it with another chemical, he could make a kind of a clay, almost a plaster. And so he made these walls of this plaster, and then he would imprint letters into them, and letters in English letters or Russian letters or Cyrillic letters. And so there's other codes that are pressed into the stuff that used to be classified documents from the CIA. So that's the kind of stuff that he's creating here. Before all this, some of the earliest stuff that he did in 1974 had nothing to do with encryption, zero. He did these large public works. He liked working with aluminum. He liked working with sandstone and different kinds of stone materials. If any of you have ever been to Baltimore and you've been to the Cold Spring Metro Station, you've probably seen this, and you've been outside the station, you've probably seen this, which is right there. If you've been driving along the Patapsco River Valley in Baltimore, you may have seen this. So they're just scattered here and there, mostly around the D.C. area. And then when he was doing gallery works a bit later, again, he was working with sandstone, and he was already starting to work with this idea of invisible forces. So you can see here we're dealing with the idea of lightning coming from nowhere and striking down through the rock. And this is not actually a spark. What he did is he placed a slab of slate here that had a crack through the slate. So with the light shining down through the slate and the light reflecting on the, or beaming onto the wall there, made it look like a lightning bolt. And then he had arranged the art such that at the very bottom there's a small stone here, and that's actually a magnetic lodestone, which had nothing to do with forming that form of light, but that's the way that he was arranging it. Here's one of the installations I was talking about with the needles that are all pointing at lodestones, so that were all suspended, and again we have the lightning theme here. And then he was, again, decorating other buildings. This is a place called Artery Plaza in Bethesda. So again, we have a lightning bolt, and the piece was called Hidden Under the Three Events. And so there were other sides of it that would show like something like a Coriolis force. And then as part of that, in another part of the building, he had a slab here where he had carved a compass rose. The needle on the compass rose was not pointing to north, though. If you get up close, you could see, and you looked carefully in the plants, there was a lodestone hidden among the plants. So the needle, it was sort of a joke. If you follow the needle, you can find the lodestone over there in the landscaping. This was the piece that he did, I believe, just before Kryptos. So it would take like a couple years to do these large pieces. So this is in Arlington, Virginia. And again, we have a column here with something coming, a metal coming down, representing lightning, and a lodestone. And there was also a carved compass rose over there as well. And someone actually went by and was checking which way is it pointing. And so they put a compass saying, well, north is this way, but the compass is pointing this way. I believe the compass was, again, pointing towards that lodestone. So then his next big commission was Kryptos. He got it. The CIA actually asked him to do it. Sanborn was in a pool of artists that was volunteering to do artwork for government buildings. And when the committee that was researching the people to invite to do art around the CIA, they liked that Sanborn had this background of invisible forces, and they felt that that kind of tied into the mission of the CIA and spies and hidden information. So they asked him to do it. They didn't ask him to do this in particular. They just asked him to do art around the building, and then he did more research on the CIA, and this was the first time he'd ever did a sculpture with text on it. So it was a completely new phase of his career that was beginning here. Of what we're seeing here, it's about 12 feet tall. It's about 20 feet long. There are letters that are carved through it, so you're actually looking through the sculpture to see the other side of it. And there's about 2,000 characters there. One side has what's called a visionaire tableau. I'll go more into that. The other side has the actual codes. So it's the left-hand side there has the codes 1, 2, 3, 4. The top three have been solved. The fourth one hasn't been solved yet. Sanborn also very carefully arranged the stones at the bottom there. That white quartz stone, again, is different from the other kinds of works that he's done. He's worked with stone a lot, but I'm not aware of any others that have used that kind of white stone before. This is the other side, which is not the code side, but the visionaire tableau side. So you can see here we have the alphabet going down from A to Z and A to Z. And then across here we have the word Kryptos, and then it continues with the alphabet, A, B, C, D, E. And so we get these, and then the next line is over by once you get these diagonals of A's and B's and C's and J's and L's and M's. And this is a tableau that is sometimes used, it's called the visionaire tableau, to encrypt or decrypt a message. However, in the case of Kryptos, this tableau is not used to encrypt or decrypt any of the three parts that have been solved. They do use a visionaire system, but not that visionaire system. So why he did that, we're not sure. Parts 1 and 2 use visionaire, and part 3... I believe that's a Quagmire 3 variation.
Right.
Well, maybe it's Quagmire 2. We have a crypto expert here. You'll actually see slides from John later on in the talk. So part 1 starts here at the very top, goes EMUFPHD, and part 1 is the top two lines of the sculpture here. And, okay, Quagmire 3, okay. So we have this one, it uses keys of Kryptos and Palimpsest. This is what's called the ciphertext, and the plain text, it comes out to say, between subtle shading and the absence of light lies the nuance of illusion. Now it says occlusion there. And I've asked Sanborn about that cue there. I said, was it just a mistake? Was it a typo that worked its way into the sculpture? And he said, no, it's not a mistake. It's deliberate, but it's not what it is that's so important. It's where it is. It's its orientation or its positioning, which we don't know what that means. Maybe it's a red herring. Maybe it really means something. Who knows? Part 2 begins about here at the third line and goes down to the bottom of this plate. And this is the ciphertext. Sanborn did admit a couple years ago that there was an error in this, that he had left out a letter at the very bottom, which was an S, which in this kind of visionary system, each letter is decrypted not just by what it is, but by where it is. So even shifting something to the left or the right by one can change the text entirely. So that last part, we thought it said one thing, and then we found out it said something different. So with the keywords Kryptos and Abscissa, the plain text came out to be, it was totally invisible. How's that possible? They used the Earth's magnetic field, X. The information was gathered and transmitted underground to an unknown location, X. Does Langley know about this? They should. It's buried out there somewhere, X. Who knows the exact location? Only WW. This was his last message, X. 38 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north, 77 degrees, 8 minutes, 44 seconds west, X layer 2. Originally, we thought that last part said ID by Rose. It looked like English, but Sanborn said no, that was wrong because he left out a letter. With the letter inserted, it says X layer 2, which is, of course, much more clear now. Everything makes sense now. All right. So part 3 starts at the top of this plate, goes down to about here. And then we also have these letters that are slightly out of alignment. I've shown this slide to Sanborn, and he's pointed at those letters, and he says, those letters are important. Have you guys figured anything out about those? And we haven't found any specific way for sure that connects those letters to any of the codes that we've cracked. So it may, I mean, we've found several possible ways, but there hasn't been anything that's just been like a slam dunk. So part 3 uses a different kind of transposition system. Transposition. So parts 1 and 2, I don't know if you remember in the ciphertext, we would see lots of consonants there, X's and Q's and Z's. It was a very even distribution of the alphabet. Looking at this, you can see that there's a lot more vowels. You got E's and A's and T's. The most frequently used letter in the English alphabet is E. The most common three-letter word in the English language, the. And so this is a different system because all of the letters of the message are there. They're just scrambled up. And there's several different methods that they can be descrambled. And so it's possible that there's clues around cryptos to that type of decrypting. And they come out to say the plain text message of slowly, desperately slowly, the remains of passage debris that encumbered the lower part of the doorway was removed. With trembling hands, I made a tiny breach in the upper left-hand corner. And then, widening the hole a little, I inserted the candle and peered in. The hot air escaping from the chamber caused the flame to flicker, but presently details of the room within emerged from the mist. X. Can you see anything? Q. Anyone recognize that? Exactly. That's when the opening of King Tut's tomb, November 26, 1922, as described by Howard Carter. And he wrote it in his journal, and then he wrote about it later in a book. And Sanborn has always said that he was fascinated by that particular passage. And he liked the idea of, again, somebody going into something that was hidden and discovering something that had not previously been seen. And he liked the way that that linked to the idea of codes. And then this is part 4 ciphertext, which can't tell you what it says. We don't know yet. It's 97 or 98 characters, and the reason we say 97 or 98 is because of this question mark here. The last part of part 3 is, can you see anything, Q? So it's possible that the question mark is the end of part 3, or it might be the beginning of part 4. Part 4 might be written backwards, or it's scrambled. We don't know. So we say 97 or 98 characters. The first 3 parts were first solved publicly by a man named Jim Galogli in 1999. He used a computer attack on it. And then after his announcement, CIA came forward and said, well, they had someone that had solved it in 1998, an internal analyst, just working on his own time, nights and weekends, using pencil and paper. And then after that, then the NSA came forward and said, well, you know, they had people that had done it too. And for a long time, they really wouldn't say, you know, who it was or when it had happened. But bit by bit, we kind of teased the information out of them that it was in 1992. They had a team that ran some computer attacks using the classified computer systems at NSA to try and solve part 4. And they successfully solved the first 3 parts, wrote a memo on it, sent it to CIA, but hadn't solved part 4. I've talked to people who were on that team. I've talked to people who have read that report since then, who agree that it has parts 1 through 3, but not part 4. I'd like to see the report for myself, so I actually filed a Freedom of Information Act request to see if I could get it out of the NSA. I haven't gotten the paperwork back, but it's still working through the government bureaucracy there. So while I was researching cryptos, then I started going into, well, what else has Sanborn done? And the first thing I found out Well, one of the first things was that after he created Kryptos, he created something called the Untitled Kryptos piece, which he sold to a private collector. So now we're switching back to the gallery side of his work. And it's changed hands. The collectors sold it, and then it got donated to a museum. And it's currently at the Hirshhorn Museum in Washington, D.C. So if you've been at the mall there, and there's that large oval museum, right outside the door to that, this piece, or a larger version of this piece is standing. And it has these two sides, and on the one side it has all of the text that's on Kryptos, and on the other side it has encrypted text that is in Russian. And there's a few differences between the text on Kryptos and what's actually on Kryptos. And the text in Russian encrypted was also on another sculpture of his, which I'll show you a slide in a sec. On the English side, there were a couple differences. One difference is that we're on Kryptos, the parts go 1, 2, 3, 4. On the Untitled Kryptos piece, that starts with section 3 and goes 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, starts over at 1, and I think it chops partway through 2. It doesn't have those out of alignment letters like we saw in the Kryptos sculpture. And also, there are these two dots, which appear only on the Untitled Kryptos piece, but not on the actual Kryptos sculpture itself. Then the Russian side of the Untitled Kryptos piece was repeated on another sculpture that Sanborn did called the Cyrillic Projector. This was originally something that he used in gallery installations, and he wanted it to be in a room beaming encrypted Russian text all around the room so that as people walked through the room, they would have the light playing over them as they walked through. He wanted everyone to be touched by the mysteries. And then eventually, when he was done with it in gallery installations, he sold it to the University of North Carolina in Charlotte, where it is now in a plaza between the Friday and the Fretwell buildings. So when we discovered this, the Kryptos group, we started researching more about it, and one person went in and took pictures, and then some more people went in and did transcripts of it, and again, very long story, which I'm making very, very short here, we cracked the code, and we found out that it was actually extracts of classified KGB documents that were sitting on the sculpture now in the middle of University of North Carolina. And we were like, okay, well, how did Sanborn get classified KGB documents? Well, Sanborn's father worked for the Library of Congress. He was the director of exhibitions for the Library of Congress. And in the 80s, there were people that were defecting from the collapsing Soviet Union coming over the United States. And one of the guys that came with several, you know, bags, suitcases of classified KGB documents, which he was bringing with him as he was defecting. These documents have been passed over to the Library of Congress. Sanborn got a chance to see them that way, and then he used some of those documents as the source material for these sculptures that he's doing with classified Russian text. Question?
So if you discovered that they were classified Russian documents, before you discovered how he got access to them, how did you discover that they were classified Russian documents?
All right. As I was doing research on Sanborn, and kind of doing a sidetrack here, but I was trying to collect as much information as I could about everything he'd ever done. And I'd called his agent, and I'd said, can you send me a list of everything Sanborn's ever done? And the agent said that there's no such list. And I said, well, there's got to be a list in art galleries. And the agent said, no, there's no such list. It would be impossible to make a list of everything Sanborn had ever done. And so I said, okay, I'll make a list of everything Sanborn's ever done. And so I started writing to any place where Sanborn appeared, any place where he'd done a gallery show and there would be like a program book, any place where he'd done a show, any place where he'd been in contact with a museum of some kind. And one of the places I contacted was the Smithsonian, because there had been a woman who used to be an agent of Sanborn's, and she had several folders of work on Sanborn, and then she had eventually donated all of this information to the Smithsonian Museum. So I wrote to the Smithsonian along with several other places, and I said, send me everything you got on Sanborn here, I'll pay you for copying. And so they sent me a big stack of documents. My apartment was a mess. I had like folders just stacked everywhere. And as I was going through these folders from the Smithsonian Museum, I was going through and I pulled out this document, and it was in Russian. And I can read a little bit of Cyrillic, and you know, secret. So in these folders from the Smithsonian I'd just been sent was a classified KGB memo. And later on, when we cracked the code on the Cyrillic projector and went back and looked and saw that the code, part of it came from that memo that had been in that folder. I'm guessing that what happened is that as Sanborn was trying to sell the sculpture, that they were showing to potential buyers, here, this is what it says, and showing them the Russian document. It's kind of accompanying materials going along with it. We also did additional research and found out more about the guy that had actually defected and other documents that he had provided. So there's websites that you can go to which will list many classified in Russia. Here, it's not classified to us. And I actually had called the FBI. When I ran across this document, it's a classified Russian document, I called the FBI and I said, I'm holding a classified Russian document. Do I need to tell anybody? He said, well, is it classified by a U.S. government agency? And I said, no, it's Russian. He says, oh, that's fine. He didn't care. he would care if I had something that was classified, our state secrets, but somebody else's state secrets, that was fine. He checked. It was a document from 1982. It was pretty old. They had other sources to get that information. That answered the question? Okay. So on this sculpture, it also used a visionaire system. It also had a visionaire tableau. And the tableau, again, used a system, Quagmire 2, on this one, the visionaire tableau was written as a Quagmire 3 system. The code was encrypted with a Quagmire 2 system. So we had this system on this sculpture, what was needed to solve the code on Kryptos, but not the code on this sculpture. And the tableau on Kryptos, that system was used to decrypt the code on this sculpture, but not what was actually on Kryptos. So it was interesting that he had that kind of crossbreeding. And John is saying, no, it's not like that, but we'll talk about it later. Okay. So this one used a two-keyword system, and one of the keywords was a Russian word, chen, and the other word was a word, Medusa. And Medusa actually appears through the light that is there, and it shows up here as the USA, and it shows up because anyone who knows Cyrillic knows that there's no S in Cyrillic. It's from a different alphabet showing up there. So again, here we have the full word, Medusa. So where does this word come from on the sculpture? And it actually, on the third line up here, the word Medusa is actually carved into the sculpture so that it appears there on the wall. And John Wilson, who's standing here, he discovered something very interesting when he went up and he looked at that third line. And he discovered that right there on the third line, there's an extra bolt. And it's kind of difficult to see when you're looking at it from the outside, but if you're looking at it from the inside, it's really obvious. And it's the only bolt like that on the entire sculpture. So it's possible that Sanborn put that bolt there as a hint, something to draw the eye to that line as another reminder there's something important there. I've asked Sanborn about the bolt, and he says, oh, he just put it there for, structural integrity because the plates were starting to come apart or something. So I get the feeling he's kind of dissembling a little bit. So why is Kryptos not solved yet? It's possible that there's some visual clue there that we just can't see because we can't get at it. I'm considered the world's number one expert on Kryptos. I've only seen the thing once. I had to go through I had to give a talk on Al-Qaeda codes and get security clearances and schedule a specific time. I've had some people who are on site at Langley who might work in the cafeteria or analysts of some type go up and, take a look at it and then send me their impressions of what they saw. I asked them to look on the inside of the letters to see where some carved in a more rough manner. So maybe if the letters were like rough, smooth, maybe there was a Morse code message in there somewhere. But no one's discovered anything specific, or at least has contacted me about it. So the longitude and latitude point to the general location of CIA headquarters. This was the original headquarters building, and then they outgrew that building. Sorry, went back. And so they commissioned a new building. And this is when they commissioned new art to go around the building, and that's when Sanborn came in. And he created Kryptos, which is right about here. And he also created some pieces out here. This white building with the funny-shaped roof, this is the cafeteria in between the original and new headquarters buildings. So here's another. Again, we have the cafeteria here. Here's some trucks and cars for you to get an idea of scale. Kryptos is this little squiggle right here. Sanborn designed Kryptos. He designed this entire semicircular area, a duck pond. There's some marble slabs here. You can see it's all kind of in a line pointing towards Kryptos. He also designed some pieces here, which again sort of went in a line as well. So again, here's another angle. I love these kinds of high altitude reconnaissance pictures. They're so helpful. So we have again the duck pond and slabs pointing at Kryptos. And he did these sections out here. So we believe that the longitude and latitude points to right about here, 150 feet southeast of Kryptos. We've had people go there and look at that spot, haven't seen anything unusual. There are manhole covers around, and there's probably office space under this area as well. Sanborn has been very specific that he was very precise about it. And the coordinates actually went to 6.5 seconds of north. And so anyone who's done geocaching knows that a tenth of a second of latitude is a very specific location, about 10 feet across. So even allowing for errors, that he would have something right there. And he actually used a United States Geological Service benchmark to make sure that he was getting the exact latitude and longitude. So now these other pieces out here, he again has slabs, and here, you can't really see it in this picture, but he again has an engraved compass rose where the needle is not pointing in the direction of north. There is a lodestone here, and there's another tiny little slab here which has no obvious markings on it. May have something to do with the puzzle, may not. There's also slabs of copper in between these two large sections that have Morse code messages on them. These Morse code messages say things like, SOS, shadow forces, T is your position. And I asked Sanborn, we were wondering, does T is your position, does that mean it really says what is your position, but you just can't see it because the Morse code goes right in between the slabs? And he says, yes, that's exactly right. The Morse code goes right underneath. I said, well, how are we supposed to know the rest of what it says? He said, I don't know. So it's possible that there's some other clue there. And then he was going on about how when he was installing all of this at CIA, that each night after he was done, that the CIA would send people out with really powerful neutron scanners to scan everything he'd done to make sure he wasn't planting a bug or a listening device of some type on CIA. So another thing, an angle that we're working on with our Kryptos discussion group is saying, okay, well, they did these scans, so there must be paperwork somewhere that shows the results of those scans that might show what the Morse code messages are in between those slabs. But we've filed Freedom of Information Act requests on those and have been told that they have not been able to locate these documents, which either means they've lost them or they were destroyed or they just never really kept strong reports on it. We don't know. So this goes again to after he did CIA and he received several bags of these kind of crinkly, shredded stuff, classified documents, and he made several large pieces which he called the covert operations fragments. And we're trying to track down the locations of all of these. One of these is hanging on the wall in one of the offices at the Federal Reserve Board Art Gallery. Some others are hanging in a museum or in a restaurant next to a museum. If you've ever been to the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C., there's a restaurant next door called the Zola Spy Restaurant. And Sanborn has decorated that with several things. Some of these fragments are up there, some things that are what's called Russian dead drops. So it was messages that Russian spies would send to each other about where they were going to leave information. And there's also several references to Kryptos around there as well. Next he went on and he did this phase where he was doing microfiche kind of work. This screen is a screen that's a few meters square. And it's actually carved with very, very, very tiny text all the way through it. And if you look at it very closely, you can see this all the way through it, Russian. And we haven't yet gone through and transcribed these, to my knowledge. I don't think anyone from the group has, to see what they actually say. I'm guessing that, again, they're from these classified Russian documents. And then he went through this phase where it was called the decoding filters phase. And here he would, again, play with light. So he would have grids that had text carved through the grids and then a light shining from above. So the light would shine through the top one and then it would go to the second one and then shine through the second one and then you'd end up with a pattern on the third one. And this is kind of showing. So on this second one that we're seeing where it's saying inclinara, you know, tilted, is from the light that's coming here, and then the light is coming straight through a hole here, which is going down through there, which is appearing down there, and that was aqueous, which was light, I think. Anyone here speak that language? Okay. So, A-E-Q-U-U-S. It might mean balance. Sorry, it slipped my mind at the moment. Now, it's possible, decoding filters. At this point, Sanborn had finished Kryptos, and he had been taught about encryption by a man named Ed Scheidt, who was the director of the CIA Cryptographic Center. And the assumption had kind of been that the code was going to be cracked fairly rapidly. Maybe one part would last for several years. But Sanborn really wasn't worried about it. He was going on. So, and Sanborn, he repeats phases in his career with magnetism and sandstone and lightning. So it's possible that the systems, the encryption systems that he used on Kryptos, he may have repeated on some of these future things. And so I think these decoding filters are very interesting because he may have used keywords or types of systems that he was thinking about with Kryptos, maybe something with light projection, and there's just a lot of different angles to look at. Yeah, the keywords and yeah, I mean, well, we don't know what K4 says, but it's very possible. Yes, yes, this is true. He did reuse keywords on those, absolutely. Right. Ombra, shadow. So again, this idea of hidden, things hidden. And then he went on this big phase where he did many public works that were all using this carving text through metal, but they weren't necessarily encrypted. They would be related to whatever area that he was in. So if he was in Indian Run Park, then he would carve things in the languages of the Native American Indians that were in that area. He also buried arrowheads in the area because he liked the idea of people continually being able to find arrowheads there. He did a text that was the name of local plants that were in the area, or the Indian names for the local plants in the area. But he had this pipeline, almost, of doing these cylindrical sculptures. This is at the Washington, D.C. Convention Center, if you've ever been there. It's two tall cylinders. One is here in the background, and then this one. And they have a series of rings of text, and each ring is in a different language. And each one is a snippet of a text from the history of that culture that talks about a meeting. The tribes came together, the Chinese noblemen came together, and so lingua and languages.
While I'm thinking about it, look up the Georgia Guide Stones. It actually predates this stuff. It has a lot of different languages also, large stones.
Okay, all right, we'll talk about that. And again, we have, something with a light on the inside of it that's beaming light onto the wall, so we have the text. People are walking through and being touched by the light as they go through. This is one he did for the Internal Revenue Service. It's called Binary Systems. And this is an enormous, enormous lodestone. They actually had to put a warning line around it because people that were going too close, their credit card, the magnetic strips were being wiped from the magnetism that was so close. And people would go out like on their break and take paper clips and just toss them at the stone to get them to stick to the stone. And what he did here was he took many names. I think these are presidents and secretaries of the treasury. And so it's looking like they're passing through the stone and coming out in binary. So here it's interesting, binary is showing up in a system. Binary, to our knowledge, is not used anywhere in Kryptos. But again, we have this thing of Sanborn reusing something. Maybe he did use binary somewhere in Kryptos, and that's why all this binary is showing up here. This is also at the IRS. There is this plaza that a man is walking across, which is comprised of ones and zeros. This particular slide is backwards, but that's how it was published, was backwards. In the plaza, it's actually correct. And I think it's like comes out in from 7-bit ASCII binary to say the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, but there's something truncated on it. So again, here this is at in Connecticut at the University of Stamford. This is in Ohio, Cleveland, and Charlotte, North Carolina. This is near the Cyrillic projector. And what's interesting with these three pieces is that if they use binary or regular text, they're all using quotes from the same person, which is Adam Smith, the economist Adam Smith, who wrote about how the economy is like a spinning top, and it needs to spin and keep moving. It needs to have speed to it. So Sanborn did these two spinning top sculptures in different years, different locations, but both using Adam Smith. Here at Connecticut, the Adam Smith quote is there, but it's in binary, coming around the bottom of the sculpture there. And then he got completely away from text and went into projected light. And he would just go out into Arizona or New Mexico or California or Oregon, and he would find some place in the desert or on a coast, and he would just beam light. So we're not looking at computer graphic images here. In this case, he went out to this area with the rock structures, and he beamed this rectangle of light to it, and then just set up a camera and did a time-lapse photo. So you can actually see the star trails here in the background. This one is called Implied Geometry. This one has a grid that is being beamed at this one and then a triangle. And he did dozens and dozens of these all over the world and would meticulously keep documents of where it was, the exact latitude and longitude of where he was each time that he did these.
Where he was to beam it or where the projection in
That's a really good question. I don't know if it was where he and his camera were or if it was the actual mountain where the projection was. It's something, we have a geocacher. We have something else to research here. Yeah. So this is the spy restaurant that I was talking about. So now we're many years past the creation of Kryptos. And again, we have the restaurant, and hanging here on the wall, we have another one of the covert operations fragments. Now there's two of these in the restaurant, one on one side of the restaurant, one on the other side. If you take those two and put them together, you get one encrypted message, which was solved by John Wilson here. No. David did that one? Okay. But you were one of the people that checked it and were discovering some of the things going on with it.
I solved a different one.
The
two different ones.
Okay. And this one came out to be the same plain text as what was on Kryptos about that slowly, desperately, slowly, but with, again, some differences on it. And there was the word desperately was misspelled on Kryptos, but was spelled correctly in here. So we're kind of putting all of these things together. And this was the one on the other side of the restaurant. Very difficult to take pictures of these, the lighting stuff. Also in the restaurant is a classified document wall. It's in sheet protectors are hanging these documents in English, Russian, and French that are from the Cold War, classified. And one of the documents, and you kind of have to get down and look in between the railing of something, one of the documents is the classified document that was the plain text for the Cyrillic projector. Now, he designed this restaurant before we had cracked the Cyrillic projector. So anyone that was working on the Cyrillic projector, the answer is just hanging on the wall of this restaurant. And so we have to wonder if the answer to the Cyrillic projector was hanging on the wall of the restaurant, is the answer to Kryptos hanging on the wall of this restaurant somewhere as well? So we're trying to get close-up pictures of every single one of these documents, which is difficult because it's right next to the waiter station, and so they don't like us. I can get like five pictures, and then they kind of chase us out, and then I have to come in and take a few more pictures. Now, back, it's hard, kind of hard to see here, but these documents are hanging next to this stairway, this banister, and on the other side of the wall from the stairway is, again, beamed ones and zeros. So again, it comes in the seam of beaming light. And these ones and zeros, again, decrypted to a quote from Adam Smith. Right. To my knowledge, yes, from what I've seen. Yeah, they're hanging in the sheet protector. There might be some that are two-sided. But that's definitely something. And that area is blocked off in the restaurant. We'd definitely like to get close-up pictures of all of those. So then he went completely away from this text, from magnetism, from sandstone, and now he's obsessed with nuclear radiation and the history of atomic research. And he did a large gallery display on this at the Corcoran Gallery next door to the White House. And this is in his lab where he's building, or has built, a particle accelerator, a working particle accelerator. He has a few of them. He has one out in the back that's about four stories tall with the big sphere on top of it, and it's loud. You know, his neighbors complain because he turns it on and it's really loud, but you know, he's got like this private island down there a couple hours southeast of Washington, D.C. Washington Times has done an article on it. It's okay, he's got a particle accelerator, okay. That's the one in the back. So just to kind of tie it all together here, and I know you had a question about one of the other, the Smithy code, I'll go into that as well. So Kryptos was the first thing that he did that was encrypted, that was using text, and then he went into and did several pieces that were encrypted, and he tended to reuse the same system. He used Visioneer systems, he used transposition and binary, though we haven't found a place on Kryptos where he used binary. But he does these repeating patterns, hidden forces, Adam Smith, the Howard Carter, the Egyptology quotes, the compass roses. So possibly by studying the later sculptures that Sanborn has done, it may give us more clues towards solving that last part of Kryptos. Things that we want to figure out. WW stands for William Webster. He was the director of the CIA at the time that the sculpture was installed. Supposedly Sanborn, at the dedication of Kryptos, handed over to William Webster an envelope with the answers of what Kryptos said. We do not know where this envelope is now, so it's one of the questions. And we don't even know if the answer to K4 really was in the envelope or not. It's possible he didn't give him the whole answer. Getting the NSA report, as I said, I filed the Freedom of Information Act request. Also, this year, 2010, fall 2010, is the 20-year anniversary of Kryptos. I don't know if they're doing a ceremony on site at CIA, but if they are, I think I would be a really great speaker to have at that ceremony. So I've been trying to contact their public affairs office and saying, hey, I'll come speak and I'll bring my tape measure and I'll, you know, be able to. It would just be perfect, but I haven't been able to make a good contact. I've talked to Sanborn, I've talked to Scheidt, haven't been able to make a contact. Yes?
You pointed out the location, latitude and longitude on. You pointed out the latitude and longitude notation for the CIA headquarters where it was 37. Dan Brown has 38, I believe.
Dan Brown has 37 and Crypto says 38, yeah.
But what's the location? Can you point it out on the slide?
Sure.
Or is it there? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right about there. Oh, the Dan Browns, it's off-site Langley. It's off in a field somewhere. Yeah. Okay. And you had asked a question before the talk about Dan Brown, when he wrote Da Vinci Code, he used source material, and some people said he used a little too much source material from another book called Holy Blood, Holy Grail. And he was actually sued by the authors, or two of the three authors of Holy Blood, Holy Grail. It was Michael Bajan, Richard Lee, and Henry Lincoln. Bajan and Lee sued Brown in British court. Brown was cleared of it by the judge, but the judge, Judge Peter Smith, did something kind of fun, which is in the trial ruling where he wrote in support of Dan Brown, the judge hid a code inside of the trial ruling. And it just became international news. My phone was ringing off the hook. Everybody's saying, what does it say? You know, who's cracking the code first? And it was solved by a man named Peter Tench, who knew the judge and had gotten a few clues. But it used some of the same system that is on Kryptos. And I was going to show you a slide about that. We wrote a report. The Kryptos group, we were working on it too. We were not the first to solve it, but we did solve it, and then we wrote up a report, which is at elonka.com. I don't know why I'm getting an IP address. And so the judge had hidden things by italicizing certain letters. And if you took those letters and strung them all together, you got this, and it said Smithy code, because his name was Justice Peter Smith. And then it went into kind of this garbled text here. And he was using the Fibonacci sequence from the Da Vinci Code. And then after that, So like on Kryptos, we had those things with the diagonals. Instead of using the keyword of palimpsest or abscissa, if instead of using that, you use the Fibonacci sequence, you can get a grid. And then one line should have been shifted left, it was shifted right. But when we came it all together, and it came out to the message, Jackie Fisher, who are you, Dreadnought, was the message that was hidden there. And the reason that he put that is because Jackie Fisher is a very famous admiral in British history, the second most famous admiral in British history, and that Justice Peter Smith always felt that Jackie Fisher just never got his due. And the court date when the trial was ending was actually the 100-year anniversary of the launching of the first Dreadnought battleship, which Jackie Fisher had really been instrumental in making Dreadnoughts happen. And so the judge, in order to honor Jackie Fisher and the 100-year anniversary, he hid this code. Jackie Fisher, who are you, Dreadnought? And it's just a little message in there. So that was it. Any other questions on Sanborn, Kryptos, Da Vinci Code, Lost Symbol, anything? Nope. Okay.
Quick question.
Well, sure.
So Langley is divided into two large halves.
Langley is divided into two large halves. On the right, you've got the DI. On the right, on the left, you've got the DO. Is there any sort of echoing of that symmetry in Kryptos?
When you say DIDO,
the Directorate of Intelligence, the Directorate of Operations.
Sounds like you know a lot about the place.
So.
It's possible. I wasn't aware that they had divided it. The original headquarters building was one, and then the new headquarters building is the other. Is that how the offices are arranged?
If you draw a line down, they separate the people that analyze the intelligence from the people that collect the intelligence.
So where are the analysts on site? Would you like my laser pointer?
The lower half are the intelligence analysts. The upper half are the operations.
Okay, so the analysts are here and operations is here.
Yes.
So the people that collect the data work out of here.
Yes.
when they're in the United States as opposed to being somewhere else collecting.
Well, they're in charge of the
right.
people in.
All right, and then the analysts are there. It's possible. I hadn't even heard that particular distinction myself, so I'm unaware if Sanborn knew about it. With the sculpture that was Kryptos on one side and Latin text on one side, Russian text on the other, he definitely was trying to show the juxtaposition of the Cold War with the CIA's secrets on one side and the KGB's secrets on the other. But I don't know if he was doing something for the DI and the DO. But it's interesting.
Why does the building kind of look like something from Space Invaders?
Don't know. I'm just curious. So one of the ways I'm trying to get on site to CIA is that every so often they do have like family days when someone can bring in their cousins and everything. So if you ever have access, I'm willing to be your cousin for the day.
Not anymore.
Okay. Is there a question in the back there? Nope. All right. Okay. Well, thank you all very much for coming.
Thank you.
Enjoy DragonCon.